There's no traffic light, there's no traffic lane, there's no northbound over this side, southbound over this side.
Crafting regulations for shipping in the Bering Strait. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, January 17th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, an initiative to boost the minimum wage in Alaska is a step closer to appearing on the ballot.
We don't necessarily have to be the highest in the country, but we sure as heck shouldn't be 17th behind Florida and Arizona.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by the 2014 statewide BP Teachers of Excellence Program. Teacher nomination forms are available at bpteachers.com. The State of Alaska Department of Revenue reminds you to file online now for your 2014 PFD and consider sharing a portion of your dividend through Pick, Click, Give or contributing to a college savings plan. This message is sponsored by the State of Alaska.
Alaska's congressional delegation has been churning out press releases to trumpet Alaska-bound funds in the trillion-dollar spending bill President Obama is expected to sign tomorrow. Among them is $75 million in fisheries disaster assistance that could bring help to Alaskans who lost out in the failed 2012 commercial king salmon fisheries on the Yukon and Kuskokwim Rivers and in Cook Inlet. But Kieran Clayton, a spokeswoman for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, says fishing communities in New England, the Mid-Atlantic, and the Gulf Coast and Samoa are also eligible.
NOAA and our parent agency, the Department of Commerce, will be working with each individual state's governor offices and industry folks on next steps for allocation of those funding.
The money could ultimately go out as direct aid to fishermen, but could also be used for retraining, infrastructure, or for projects to prevent future fish disasters. Among the other projects they're highlighting in the spending bill, more than $100 million for construction of aviation buildings at Fort Wainwright and $82 million for a building at Fort Greeley. Vessel traffic is increasing through the Bering Strait, and no regulations exist to monitor that movement. The United States Coast Guard wants to change that. KNOM's Anna Rose MacArthur reports from Nome.
No country owns the Bering Strait waters, and no international law manages vehicle movement through the passage. As ice melts and traffic increases, this absence of regulation creates hazardous conditions for vessels. United States Coast Guard Admiral Tom Ostebo says the growing risk is his primary concern for the Arctic.
There's no traffic light, there's no traffic lane, there's no northbound over this side, southbound over this side, reporting in requirements at all for going through the Bering Strait.
With no standard routing or reporting requirements, the risk for accidents increases. Last year, Ostebo says the Bering Strait saw the largest number of ship and cargo traffic in the Strait's history, and the Coast Guard expects an even higher rate this year. In fact, international traffic is projected to reach such heights that Ostebo compares the Bering Strait to the Panama Canal in future global use and status.
A major international strait that's emerging, I would submit the biggest one since the Panama Canal, it's happening right in front of us.
To implement preventative measures, the Coast Guard and its Russian counterpart are drafting voluntary regulations for passage through the Bering Strait. Ostebo says the voluntary agreement would become standard practice through insurers incorporating the measures as terms and conditions in their policies.
Clearly, if you're in the shipping business and you're not following a best practice standard, although it's voluntary and you have a problem, culpability follows shortly behind that from a legal perspective.
The voluntary system would serve as a placeholder until the International Maritime Organization passed laws to govern the strait, a process expected to take many years. Ostebo says the United States is sponsoring the law and is seeking support from Russia to help move the ruling forward. In Nome, I'm Anna Rose MacArthur.
With the legislative session getting ever closer, lawmakers have released another batch of bills for consideration. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez has more.
The second round of early bills is smaller than the one released last week, with fewer than 20 bills filed. There don't seem to be any big money bills or sweeping reforms among them. Most instead deal with specific situations. In the House, a few bills concern healthcare, lawsuits, and the intersection of the two. One bipartisan piece of legislation would create a directory of living wills. Another bill would make it so that a healthcare provider's apology couldn't be admissible evidence in a malpractice case. On the other end of the spectrum, there's a bill that would give parents the right to sue if someone's at fault for the death of an unborn child. That bill includes language carving out abortions and deaths caused in the course of standard medical care. There's also a bill in the House to limit what sort of data could be collected on students. A different item would create a simple taxpayer receipt of what the state spends its money on, to be issued when permanent fund dividend checks are sent out. Rounding that all out is legislation to ban genetically engineered crops in the state, to license private investigators, and to regulate drones. Only two bills were introduced in the Senate. One would allow officers to leave parking tickets on windshield, a practice the legislature unintentionally banned in 2010. The other would reject pay raises for the governor and his commissioners. In Juneau, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
Sponsors of an initiative to raise Alaska's minimum wage have turned in their signatures. They submitted 43,000 names to the Division of Elections Anchorage office this morning. The initiative would raise the minimum wage by $1 to $8.75 at first, and then increase by another dollar in 2016. The initiative also builds in future increases to counteract inflation. Ed Flanagan is one of the primary sponsors of the initiative and a former labor commissioner. He says Alaska should have a higher minimum wage than most states because of the cost of living.
We don't necessarily have to be the highest in the country, but we sure as heck shouldn't be 17th behind Florida and Arizona.
With signatures in, Flanagan says the group will be focusing more on fundraising and advertising. Flanagan isn't worried about other groups opposing the minimum wage increase. He's more concerned about the initiative being preempted by the legislature, which happened the last time a citizen effort like this was attempted. In 2002, state lawmakers passed a bill that resembled a minimum wage initiative under consideration. But they went back and stripped out the measures tying the pay rate to inflation.
We have to be ready for that with a lot of advertising and explain to people why a vote for a minimum wage bill right now is not a good thing. It's a bad thing.
The legislature reconvenes on Tuesday, and so far there are no minimum wage bills under consideration. If at least 30,000 of the signatures are valid, the initiative should appear on the August primary ballot. In a count of millionaires per capita, Alaska ranks fifth among states, according to a market research firm that tracks affluence. Phoenix Marketing International estimated investable assets per household based on commercial surveys, the census, and other data. Alaska has risen from 14th place in 2006 to land just below Hawaii. The study points to Washington, D.C. as the capital of wealth. Mississippi was at the bottom of the list. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the state considers adding girls wrestling to the high school sports schedule.
I'd always feel good because I'd always be the underdog because I was the girl, so it'd always feel extra special to win.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
A message to parents from the Alaska Department of Education. Learning to read is the basis for all future learning. Parents can help their children get off to a good start as readers. Read with your young children every day. Do lots of talking with your kids. Make up stories together. Play games with words like rhyming games. Encourage your kids to write and draw stories and ask your school how you can help your children become good readers. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Education.
Alaska's population growth is increasing faster than that of the rest of the country. Figures released today by the State Labor Department indicate that the state's population increased 3.7% over the past 3 years, compared with a 2.4% growth rate in the U.S. The largest increases were in Anchorage and the Matanuska-Susitna Borough, according to Eddie Hunsinger, the state demographer with the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development.
So each year we make population estimates for population by age and sex and race and ethnicity for the state. And the MATSU has increasing racial diversity, as does the state as a whole. The fastest growing racial groups in Alaska are Asians and Pacific Islanders, as well as Hispanic Alaskans. Alaska's just continue to become a more diverse state in terms of race and ethnicity.
Between 2010 and 13, Anchorage gained about 9,000 people, and the Mat-Su added 7,000 residents.
The people who are moving to the Mat-Su are either young people from Anchorage or young people from down south. And these folks are often at the beginning of starting families, or they have young families. So they're not just getting the gains from the people who move there, but also from their future families and the kids they bring with them.
Hunsinger says a large number of births accounted for some of the growth in the Mat-Su. A recent editorial in the Anchorage Daily News proposes addressing chronic inebriation and the moribund area of East 4th Avenue as the way forward to a more vibrant downtown. These ideas have been put on the table before, but not from the person charged with championing the city as a great place to visit and do business. Andrew Helcro is a former state lawmaker and the current president of the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce. Rather than glossing over the city's ongoing problems, he proposes a health campus to deal head-on with homeless people and chronic drunks.
And in my mind, a health campus would be a campus where there's detox or a sleep-off center. You have social services, rehabilitation, and even job training in the same area. And what that does is, first off, it relocates these chronic inebriates in the social services to a safer area outside of the core of downtown. Once you address that, you address the chronic inebriate problem, then you've created an environment in downtown where developers can look at it and say, okay, it's ripe. Because you can't have economic development unless the environment is ripe. And I believe that the chronic inebriates, some of the ongoing public safety issues down there with gangs and assaults have had an impact.
As you've just been talking about, the farther east you go on 4th Avenue, there's really no way to put it delicately. It gets sort of seedier looking. What would you like to see in this somewhat shabbier part of downtown?
I think that there's a couple of things you need to do. Number one, when you come into downtown, downtown should be incredibly welcoming, and it should represent the core of the city. So when you approach downtown, for instance, when you're coming down Ingra and you're coming up into town, it has a very depressing feel. And I know that the Fairview Community Council and some of the Fairview Business Association folks have long advocated for more of kind of an investment in at least the entrance. And one of the things that bothers me is there's really no vision for this city. And when you look at some of the public policies that are being embraced, they don't really make sense from an Anchorage taxpayer standpoint. For instance, the Kinnickarm Crossing, and I'm a supporter in theory of the bridge, but let's consider this. Part of the motivation of building the bridge is to open up available land. So what we're going to do is we're going to spend hundreds of millions of dollars building this bridge for folks to leave Anchorage and build a home or buy property in the Mat-Su borough who will benefit from the property taxes. Meanwhile, the folks that commute back into Anchorage will put pressure on roads and public safety without contributing any property taxes. Meanwhile, you've got valuable land that's sitting really underutilized and undertaxed in Fairview or East Downtown, where if you focused on those areas, you would actually increase the value of those, thus increasing the property taxes, thus lowering property taxes for everybody else.
It may have surprised or some Anchorage residents, or maybe perhaps made a few business owners a little green around the gills, to have the president of the Anchorage Chamber raise this issue so publicly. It would be easy for someone in your position to sort of just put a shiny, happy face on business in Anchorage and visiting Anchorage. Why are you taking this up in such a public forum?
Well, there's a couple of reasons. I mean, every day I go to work and I represent over 1,000 companies, tens of thousands of employees. They pay my salary and I view my job as looking out for them. In looking out for them, I mean by looking at the economy, seeing what areas I believe, can be improved to improve their economic opportunities. Whether you work in Anchorage, own a business in Anchorage, everything is relevant. If you're a business owner, you have to have good employees. And to have good employees, you need affordable housing. You need safe streets. You need good schools for their kids. Everything is relevant. And so as my role as president of the Anchorage Chamber, really, it's my responsibility to stand up and say, look, you, when you look at the economy, you can't look at the economy without looking at the people who are creating and driving the economy. And if you don't have a healthy, safe, and prosperous community, you really don't have much of an economy.
You are sort of taking to task a bit some of the businesses that are likely your members, the downtown bars. What do you want to see change in how these businesses handle their patrons?
I think there's a couple of things. I think this state and this city have a long tortured history with alcohol, and I think that's borne out in the statistics. I think when you consider the bar owners downtown, I think there are irresponsible bar owners, and I think for far too long they have been coddled. I think the liquor lobby in this town has dominated alcohol policy, and it's allowed bad actors to slip by because of vague laws and promises that have been unkept. And so, if we're going to improve the environment and the public safety of downtown, we really have to start getting tough. It seems to me there's a small kind of cadre of bars, they call it the triangle of trouble, the police do, that the city really needs to start to crack down on.
Andrew Halcrow is the president of the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce. 24 mushers, including 6 past champions, will be at the starting line for the 35th running of the Kuskokwim 300. The start is scheduled for 6:30 this evening. Jeff King will attempt to defend his 2013 title and earn his record 10th victory wearing bib number 10. The 300-mile race from Bethel to Aniak and back will not follow the river for the first 50 miles. An unusually warm winter has made travel on the river unreliable and at times dangerous. Aniak musher Mike Williams Sr. has run the race 24 times and says the icy trails slowed his preparation.
It's been real terrible with no snow, raining all winter long, and had to be forced to go on the four-wheeler, and because the conditions were so bad.
Besides the altered race course, new to the 2014 race is a change in layover rules. Instead of taking a 6-hour rest in Kalskag or Aniak, mushers will be able to split up those 6 hours in 1-hour increments between the checkpoints. Bethel racer Pete Kaiser says he doesn't expect it to be a major change.
It's such a small amount of rest that no matter how you slice it, it's still a hard race, and it's still, you know, just 6 hours. So I think it'll be exciting just to have something different and have a little few different strategies unfold, but in the end, everybody's going to probably take the same amount of rest in the front.
The race carries a $110,000 purse. The winner takes home $22,000.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Crowley. Celebrating 60 years in Alaska, Crowley knows Alaska and uses that experience to deliver project solutions from concept to completion. More at CrowleyAlaska.com. Electronic health records give doctors, nurses, and families secure access to medical information when and where it's needed most. If it's providing a new doctor access to your child's medical history or taking a loved one to the emergency room, electronic health records provide safe, secure, life-saving information on the spot. For more information, go to ak-ehealth.org. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services in partnership with the Alaska eHealth Network.
Ketchikan, Kotzebue,
Dillingham, Sitka, Chugiak, Fairbanks, Fort Yukon, Wrangell, Barrow, Unalaska, Dutch Harbor, Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Annie Ropeek. This week on AK, girls wrestling. Your high school might have had a wrestling team, but how many wrestlers were girls? There are more than a dozen girls on Sitka's Mount Edgecombe High School wrestling team, and they regularly beat boys in their weight class. The team is tackling more than just gender barriers. They're paving the way for the first girls-sanctioned wrestling tournament in the state of Alaska. KCAW's Emily Foreman has the story.
Send your legs sky out! Deirdre Creed is just a few pounds shy of 100. But don't let her petite build and golden locks fool you. She is dangerous.
I feel pain, but usually if you're the one on top, you're the one inflicting the pain.
At a recent wrestling practice, Dee Dee faces her opponent. She crouches low with outstretched arms, and when the whistle blows, she lunges forward and hooks a knee, knocking her opponent to the ground. It's over fast.
I'd always feel good because I'd always be the underdog because I was the girl, so it always feel extra special to win.
Since there isn't a girls' wrestling team, Dee Dee wrestles boys. She's a senior and just competed in the last state tournament of her high school career. But she hopes the younger girls on her team will someday compete in a girls-only season. This idea is not far-fetched. The Alaska School Activities Board is reviewing a proposal to create a girls-sanctioned tournament. If approved, it will be thanks to this guy.
My name is Mike Kimber, and I'm the wrestling coach at Mount Edgecombe High School.
One, two, three, four.
At practice, Kimber stands at the center of the mat, barking out drills. He's wearing a t-shirt that says, Girl Wrestlers Rule. Kimber has coached the Mount Edgecombe wrestling team for 15 seasons. He started recruiting girls in his second year. While Mount Edgecombe isn't the only team in Alaska with girls, they likely have the most. Kimber estimates he coaches 26 girls. 19 made it to regionals.
Matter of fact, my first nationally ranked wrestler was a girl, a young lady from Cold Bay named Sonia Maxwell. She qualified for the state tournament at 189 pounds against boys.
Kimber is also a Mount Edgecombe wrestling alum. When he competed, there were only a few girls on the team. Kimber remembers a time when schools would forfeit matches if girls came to wrestle. Now there's a lot less resistance, but it's still hard to shake the stereotypes.
You know, I think probably the part that's most surprising is when you come around and see people and they go, really, girls wrestle? When we go on our trips, oh, so you guys are managers? And I go, no, they're wrestlers. What do you mean they're wrestlers?
Kimber loves the sport and is adamant that it needs girls to grow. His father coached girls, and his daughter is a star wrestler. He has high but equal expectations for all his wrestlers. That kind of equality is appealing to the girls. They feel supported and challenged.
I much rather enjoy coaching girls than the boys sometimes. People say, oh, there's so much drama with girls, but really the drama on our team, it usually centers around the boys and very little around the girls.
The person that might have the most insight on how girls and boys approach the sport differently is Dee Dee's twin brother, Trevor. The pair have been wrestling for as long as they can remember.
I'm bigger, I can muscle around. So she has to like trick me by maybe push my head another direction, go that other direction. So she has to use her mind more than she wrestles.
It looks like girls wrestling is in Alaska's future. Kimber was the first to petition the Alaska School Activities Board to create a girls' wrestling season. And at a board hearing in December, Kimber and other coaches around Southeast made a compelling case. Andrew Frisky, the Southeast representative on the Alaska School Activities Board, says the idea of girls' wrestling isn't a hard sell.
These are coaches that have been around for 15, 20 years, and they said it's a no-brainer for them to start girls wrestling. And they think with more girls, there's going to be more boys that come out. They're going to have a stronger program.
But there are still some hurdles, and the board wants to make sure they weigh the financial implications and logistics of a new state tournament. In the end, the board decided to back a proposal where girls would continue to compete against boys throughout the season, but the regional and state tournament would be girls-sanctioned. As for Dee Dee, she hopes to continue wrestling in college. Her performance at state caught the eye of recruiters, winning her an invitation to represent Alaska at this year's Arctic Winter Games. That's a first for a Mount Edgecombe girl wrestler. For AK, I'm Emily Foreman.
Now it's time for 300 Villages. This week, we're heading to the community of Hooper Bay on the Bering Sea.
My name is Fred Joseph Jr. I live in Hooper Bay, and I'm the tribal administrator for the Native Village of Hooper Bay. As far as I know, it's been here for thousands of years. We were originally located down at the beach, and there was a few scattered camps all over. And they built a school here a long time ago. What is known here now as the village of Hooper Bay. They moved up here because the access to the river and the schools and the churches. There's some seasonal work, fishing and hard jobs like firefighting and construction and during the summers. And there's few permanent jobs here at the school and the city and Native Village of Hoover Bay and Sea Line and CVRF. There's subsistence activities during the summer and some during the winter. There's high school activities going on in the winter time. And just probably walk around in the tundra or going down to the beach in the summer times. I'd like to meet up in the school during the winter times and watch some games. Everybody just about knows each other and they work together, and it's nice, no hustle bustle of the city, and life is hard but simple and we get by.
Fred Joseph Jr. is the tribal administrator in Hooper Bay. 300 Villages is AK's attempt to put every community in Alaska on the radio. If you want to hear your community featured, send an email to news@alaskapublic.org. Thanks for listening to AK This Week. We had help from Emily Foreman, Monica Goki, Annie Fite, and Dave Waldron. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Annie Ropeek.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Anna Rose MacArthur in Nome, Ellen Lockyer in Anchorage, and Ben Matheson in Bethel. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reported from Juneau and Liz Ruskin from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Fite. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. Alaska's public schools have new standards in English and math, setting high expectations for students. Students who meet these goals will be ready for success after high school, whether in the military, on the job, or in an apprenticeship, technical school, or college. Ask your school for parent guides to the standards or learn more online at education.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Education and Early Development. The Older Persons Action Group, publisher of Senior Voice, Alaska's only statewide newspaper for older Alaskans and their families, can be read online at seniorvoicealaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG. An artist is a person who expresses themselves creatively through words, images, sounds, materials, or original performance. If you are an artist, you might be eligible for funding to support your creative work. March 1st is the deadline to apply for an Individual Artist Award. Visit Rasmussen Foundation on Facebook or on the web at rasmussen.org for more information. This message sponsored by Rasmussen Foundation.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.